Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
As a longtime foreign correspondent, I've worked in lots of places, but nowhere as important to the world as China. I'm Jane Perlez, former Beijing bureau chief for The New York Times. Join me on my new podcast, Face Off, U.S. versus China, where I'll take you behind the scenes in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. Find Face Off wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello and welcome to History Tea Time. I'm Lindsay Holiday, and I'm spilling the tea on history. Royal Pretenders. Whenever a royal dies under mysterious circumstances, conspiracy theories about what might really have happened inevitably spring up. With them come pretenders, people claiming to be the long-lost lord or lady, and claiming their right to royal riches. Today, we'll examine four cases of missing royals, which led to multiple famous imposters coming forward to claim a crown. And we'll look at DNA evidence to find out if any of their stories might have been true. The Princes in the Tower. In the 1400s, England was in the grips of the Wars of the Roses, a bloody conflict between York and Lancaster cousins over the crown. King Edward IV died at 40 and left the throne to his 12-year-old son, Edward V. At such a young age, he didn't stand a chance against his scheming relatives. His uncle Richard was appointed his regent and took the boy king and his younger brother, Richard, Duke of York, to the Tower of London, where he claimed they would be kept safe until the coronation. In the meantime, he falsified evidence that Edward was illegitimate and instead had himself crowned King Richard III. That summer, the two boys, Edward 12 and Richard 9, were seen playing on the battlements of the tower. But their appearances became more and more rare until August, when they were never seen again. No one knows what became of the princes in the tower, but they were most likely murdered on their uncle's orders. Richard didn't get to enjoy his ill-gotten crown for long. 2 years into his reign, he was killed at the Battle of Bosworth Field, and Henry VII took the throne. The disappearance of the rightful heirs spawned a number of pretenders to come forward. A 10-year-old peasant boy named Lambert Simnel, who resembled the princes, was taken in by a priest who tutored him in courtly etiquette. The priest made Lambert the figurehead of a Yorkist rebellion that was already on the rise. He took the boy to Ireland, where he was crowned King Edward in a cathedral in Dublin. They raised troops and returned to England, but the rebels were defeated by King Henry's army. The priest was executed, but the king recognized that young Lambert had merely been the pawn of adults. He was given a job as a spit turner in the royal kitchens, and later became a falconer to King Henry VIII. Perkin Warbeck was a Belgian cloth trader. While visiting Ireland, old supporters of the House of York noticed how much he resembled the princes who had disappeared a decade earlier. The 20-year-old presented himself at the royal courts of Burgundy, France, and the Holy Roman Empire, where he claimed that his older brother, Edward V, had indeed been murdered, but that he, Richard, Duke of York, had been spared by the assassins because of his tender age. He was recognized by Edward IV's sister, Margaret, Duchess of Burgundy, though she had left England to be married before her nephews were born. With Margaret's support, Perkin launched an invasion of England, but he was immediately defeated and fled to Scotland. There he was taken in by King James IV, a great enemy of the English kings. With Scottish troops, Perkin once again invaded England. He had more success this time, but when King James was offered a peace deal from the English, he withdrew his support and left Perkin high and dry. The pretender was paraded through the streets of London and taunted by the crowd. He was locked up in the Tower of London, the place which he claimed he had escaped as a child. Perkin was brought before King Henry, and he quickly admitted that he was a pretender and begged the king's mercy. He was allowed to live at court under guard for several months, but when he tried to escape, he was taken back to the Tower. He tried to escape again and was hanged at Tyburn like a common criminal. In 1674, workmen in the Tower of London discovered the skeletons of two children buried under a stairwell. The remains were placed in Westminster Abbey in an urn bearing the names King Edward V and Prince Richard. The urn was opened and the bones re-examined in 1933. The skeletons were incomplete and some of the bones were found to be from an animal. As DNA and forensic science have advanced, there have been repeated requests to reopen the urn. However, the Crown and the Church of England have denied the petitions. So for now, the mystery of the princes in the Tower will remain unsolved. If you haven't heard yet, I will be hosting a group tour of Scotland from May 15th to 21st. Over 7 days, we'll experience the highlights of Scottish history. We'll see the honors of Scotland at Edinburgh Castle, Bronze Age burial chambers at Balnorin of Clava, Éilean Donnan Castle, the Living History Highlands Folk Museum, the mystical Isle of Skye, and so much more. We'll try delicious Scottish delicacies and unwind over a whiskey tasting. And most amazingly of all, we'll experience it all with a group of fellow history lovers and a local guide. The other travelers and I have already been getting to know each other, and it's going to be such a fun group. There are only a few spots left, and the last day to book is March 25th. So go to trovatrip.com and search Scotland with Lindsay Holiday. My wonderful podcast listeners can use promo code HOLIDAY50 for an extra $50 off. That's trovatrip.com and search Scotland with Lindsay Holiday to book this historic journey today. The Three False Dmitries of Russia. Ivan the Terrible, the first Tsar of Russia, lived up to his name. He massacred thousands of his own people, had several of his 6 to 8 wives poisoned, and beat his eldest son to death. When he died of a stroke at 53, his second son, Fyodor, inherited the throne. He was intellectually disabled, and nobles called boyars overran the country. Fyodor's younger brother, Dmitry, died at the age of 9. The official story was that he had stabbed himself in the throat during an epileptic seizure, but his mother was pretty sure that he had been assassinated on the orders of Tsar Fyodor's regent, Boris Godunov. To silence Maria, Godunov accused her of neglecting her son and had her entire family imprisoned. Tsar Fyodor died childless at 40. Boris had himself declared Tsar, but he did not have the support of the Russian people. A Polish man came forward claiming to be Tsarevich Dmitry. He said his mother, Tsarina Maria Nagaya, had foreseen the assassination. She had a doctor smuggle him to a monastery and allowed the murderers to stab an imposter child in the neck. He did resemble the original Dmitry and had an aristocratic bearing, was a skilled horseman, and was fluent in Russian, Polish, and French. Dmitry took his tale to the court of King Sigismund III of Poland, who offered him an army. Dmitry fell in love with a Polish noblewoman, Mariana Menisek. When he asked for her hand, her ambitious father eagerly agreed. Dmitry gained the support of many unhappy Russians, and the real Tsarevich's own mother, Maria, confirmed that he was her long-lost son. While Dmitry and his army were closing in on Moscow, Tsar Boris died suddenly. Several at court supported Dmitry's claim, and they seized the opportunity to stage a coup. They murdered Boris's wife and son, who had briefly been crowned Tsar Fyodor II. Dmitry rode triumphantly into Moscow and was crowned Tsar. He made radical political and economic reforms to help the common people. He restored St. Yuri's Day, when serfs were allowed to change allegiance to other lords. He allowed Catholic and Protestant soldiers to pray openly, and did not require his Catholic wife to convert to Russian Orthodoxy. All of this made him popular with the people, but unpopular with the clergy and the boyars. Dmitry exhumed the bones of the real Dmitry in order to prove that it was the body of another. Dowager Tsarina Maria was so offended that she turned on him and declared him an imposter. The boyars spread rumors that the Tsar was planning to lock the city gates and massacre the people of Moscow. After the acts of Ivan the Terrible, this was not far-fetched. A mob of terrified peasants stormed the Kremlin. Dmitry jumped out of a window and broke his leg in the fall. He limped to a bathhouse and tried to hide, but he was dragged out by the boyars, who shot him to death. His reign lasted only 11 months. For days afterward, the streets ran red with blood, as boyars and Dmitry's supporters massacred each other. The corpse of the false Dmitry was publicly displayed, then burned. His ashes were stuffed into a cannon, and he was fired back home to Poland. A year later, another man came forward claiming to be the first Tsar Dmitry, and his widow, Marina, swore that she recognized him and lived with him. He gained the support of peasants and the Polish army, but on their march to Moscow, he was informed how much larger the Russian army was. He was terrified and fled in disguise. The second false Dmitry was discovered nearby, drunk, and was shot and then beheaded. Yet a third false Dmitry came forward, but this time few wanted to support his claim. He was quickly arrested and executed. The first false Dmitry's father-in-law, Jerzy, hadn't given up on power. He tried to build support for his three-year-old grandson, Ivan, to claim the throne. But after a small uprising, the new Tsar, Mikhail Romanov, had Jerzy and little Ivan publicly hanged. Marina was heartbroken by her son's death. According to legend, she cursed the Romanov dynasty with the words, "Damn you, you began with the death of a Tsarevich. You will end with the death of a Tsarevich." Marina was later drowned in prison. As the corpses of all three false Dmitrys were destroyed, there is no DNA to test to see if any of their claims were true. But it is generally believed that the real Tsarevich Dmitry died in 1591 at the age of 9. His remains have not been exhumed for study. Louis XVII of France. King Louis XVI and Queen Marie Antoinette's son, Louis Charles, was heir to the throne of France. He was 4 when the revolution broke out in 1789. The king and queen and their 2 surviving children, Louis Charles and Marie Therese, were locked up in the Tower of the Temple in Paris. The monarchy was abolished, and the former king was taken from his family, found guilty of treason, and executed by guillotine. Royalists and foreign powers recognized Louis Charles as King Louis XVII, but he wasn't treated like a monarch. He was ripped from his mother's arms, beaten, abused, and forced to testify that his mother had molested him. On these and other trumped-up charges, Marie Antoinette was also found guilty of treason and guillotined. The horrible conditions of Louis Charles's imprisonment caused him to contract tuberculosis. He died at the age of 10 and was buried in a mass grave. The doctor who performed his autopsy reported that he was covered in scars. He smuggled out the prince's heart and preserved it in a jar of vinegar. Brief announcements that the would-be king had died were posted in the Republic's newspapers, but there was no solid evidence of his death. Over 500 books and a monthly magazine were written about the mystery of the Dauphin in the Tower, and over 100 people claimed to be him. Even a century after the Revolution, in 1884, Mark Twain's character Huckleberry Finn met a transient who was pretending to be the little boy dolphin. 3 years after the reported death of a prince, a handsome teenager with aristocratic manners was found wandering the countryside and arrested. For months, he refused to say who he was. Villagers became convinced that he was really Louis Charles. They brought him gifts and money, and the teen was happy to go along with their theory. Soon his prison cell was transformed into a luxurious apartment, and he had a court of hangers-on. Eventually, it was revealed that he was a runaway tailor's son named Jean-Marie Evagot. But he was too deep in the lie and came up with even more grandiose proof of his true identity. He claimed a brand on his leg of a shield and the lilies of France had been made by the Pope himself. Jean-Marie went to his grave in 1812, still claiming to be the rightful King of France. In 1814, Napoleon's fall led to the restoration of the Bourbon dynasty. Louis Charles's uncle became King Louis XVIII. Now that there was, once again, a throne to claim, there was a boom in pretenders. Doctors at asylums and guards at royal palaces became adept at rebuffing the many false dauphins they encountered. The fad made its way abroad. Claimants appeared in England, Denmark, Colombia, and the Seychelles. In the United States, a Native American, Eleazar William, was paid off by a French nobleman and agreed to abdicate all rights to the throne. A man from New Orleans, calling himself Charles de Navarre, made it all the way to the French royal court to plead his case, but was dismissed. He was heavily scarred and missing many teeth. He wrote pleading letters signed Dauphin Bourbon to the real prince's sister, Marie Therese, the only one of Marie Antoinette's children who definitely did survive the revolution. She was hounded by people claiming to be her brother throughout her life and found them very distressing. One woman even claimed to be the real Marie Therese and said that the woman who is now part of the restored royal family was an imposter. She claimed that she had been swapped with her best friend, Ernestine Lambiquet, and that she, the real Madame Royal, had escaped to Germany. There she went by the name Sophie Botta, lived as a recluse in a castle, and was never seen outside without her face being veiled. Many locals believed her intriguing story, and she was nicknamed the Dark Countess. Fraudulently claiming to be a royal was made illegal in France, but the pretenders still rolled in. A dapper Italian man calling himself Baron de Richemont sent increasingly threatening letters to Marie Therese. He was put on trial, and in the middle of the proceedings, a man stood up in court and exclaimed, "I am the bearer of a letter written by the real Charles Louis." The letter he produced was from a man who would soon become the most credited claimant, Carl Wilhelm Naundorff. The Baron managed to escape prison, but by this time, Karl had stolen the fake Dauphin spotlight. Karl was a German clockmaker who had done hard time for arson and counterfeiting money. He wrote a memoir telling a tale of having been swapped for a dying deaf-mute boy and being smuggled out of the tower by revolutionary leaders Paul Barras and Napoleon's future wife, Josephine. Karl spoke very little French, but had intimate knowledge of the royal court. He convinced several at the palace that he was genuine, including the nurse who had raised the real Louis Charles. Marie-Thérèse saw a picture of Carl and said he had no resemblance to her brother. She refused to meet him, though he attempted to force encounters on numerous occasions. Eventually, he sued her for her inheritance, and the French government deported him. He died in 1845, and his gravestone read, "Here lies Louis XVII, King of France." Carl's descendants continued to press his claim, mounting court battles into the 1950s. But in the 1990s, DNA from a lock of Carl's hair was compared to that of the remains of Marie Antoinette, and it was proven that Carl Wilhelm Nuremberg was not a relation. DNA was also taken from the remains of the Dark Countess, and she was proved not to be the real Marie-Thérèse. All this time, the heart taken from the corpse of the child presented as Louis Charles had been passed around noble families. In 2000, DNA from the mummified heart was found to be a match to DNA from the remains of Marie Antoinette and other French royals, confirming once and for all that Dauphin Louis Charles really had died in prison at the age of 10. In 2004, the poor prince's heart was placed in the royal family vault in the Basilica of Saint-Denis, near his parents and siblings.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Have you ever wondered what really happened to Amelia Earhart or the lost colony of Roanoke? Do you ever find yourself scouring the internet for vicious Victorians and their murders by gaslight? Or perhaps you're just sick and tired of women being constantly misrepresented or plain lied about throughout history? If so, join me, Katie Charlwood, history harlot and reader of books, on Who Did What Now, the history podcast that's not your history class. Part of the Airwave Media Network. Available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Adios, au revoir, au revoir de zen, my friends. Bye-bye. I'll be seeing you.
The Romanov Children. Tsar Nikolai II and Tsarina Alexandra had four daughters, Olga, Tatiana, Maria, and Anastasia. But Russian law barred women from the succession, and the couple were desperate to have a son to inherit the throne. Alexandra finally delivered a baby boy, Alexei, but he had hemophilia. The deadly blood disease had struck several members of Alexandra's family, and she knew the great danger it posed. She became obsessed with healing her beloved son, who suffered frequent excruciating pain. The empress was charmed by a mystic faith healer, Grigory Rasputin. He seemed to help Alexei and insinuated himself into the imperial family, all the while abusing his other followers, committing lewd acts, and running the empress's reputation through the mud. Rasputin was murdered by members of the royal family, but it was too late to save the sinking Romanov dynasty. The Russian Revolution broke out in 1917, and Nikolai was forced to abdicate. He, his wife, and their five children were held prisoner for a year. On July 17, 1918, the family and their attendants were awoken in the middle of the night. They were told that there was unrest in the town and that they must go down to the basement for their own protection. Once there, their jailer read out the sentence of execution, and the guards opened fire. Bullets bounced off the daughters, who had sewn their jewelry into their coats. The soldiers had to finish them off with bayonets. Their bodies were mutilated by sulfuric acid and fire, and their remains were thrown down a mine shaft. Olga was 22, Tatiana 21, Maria 19, Anastasia 17, and Alexei just 13. His death fulfilled the curse Marina Menisek had placed on the Romanov dynasty 300 years earlier. You began with the death of a Tsarevich. You will end with the death of a Tsarevich. Russia's new leader, Vladimir Lenin, tried to cover up the murder of the children, but several people had witnessed the guards' moving bodies, and reports of the imperial family's massacre shocked the world. Rumors that one or more of the children had escaped launched multiple books and films. The 1956 film Anastasia is about a woman suffering amnesia who turns out to be the long-lost Russian princess. The 1997 animated film Anastasia follows a similar storyline. It was adapted as a Broadway musical in 2017. Anastasia has most often been the subject of escape theories, and dozens of real-life individuals have popped up, claiming to be her or one of the other lost Romanov children. Eleonora Kruger and George Sudin claim that they were Anastasia and Alexei, and that they had been replaced by doppelgangers who were killed with the family, and that they had escaped to Bulgaria. Eleonora became a teacher and told her pupils of her childhood in palaces and bathing in gold bathtubs. She claimed she was unable to sing because of old bullet wounds to her neck. George suffered from illness which might have been hemophilia or tuberculosis. Anna Anderson was the most well-known claimant. In 1922, while in a mental institution in Berlin, she began to say that she was Anastasia. The scars all over her body lent credence to her story. Several relatives and former servants of the Romanovs met her. Some left sure that she was a charlatan, while others were convinced and chalked her patchy memory and refusal to speak Russian up to trauma. Russian expats and European nobles who bought her story took her in. Tsarina Alexandra's brother hired a detective who discovered that Anna was actually a Polish munitions factory worker named Franciszka Skanskowska. Shocked by her fiancé's death at the front, she accidentally dropped a grenade, killing a fellow worker and causing her own scars. But when Franciszka's brother met Anna, he swore that he didn't know her. Anna was invited to New York by Xenia Leeds, a Russian princess who had married a wealthy American industrialist. Anna and Xenia attempted to claim the supposed vast fortune the Tsar had held outside of Russia. They made a tidy sum selling shares in the inheritance. When the Tsar's mother, Dowager Empress Marie, died in Denmark, her 12 nearest living relatives met at her funeral and signed a pact denouncing Anna as a fraud. Anna lived briefly with a Park Avenue heiress and was the toast of New York City, but her self-destructive behavior, culminating in a naked run along the rooftop, caused her benefactress to send her back to Germany. She continued to stay with various believers until the outbreak of World War II caught her in the Soviet occupation zone and a target for assassination. She escaped to the United States, where she married an eccentric history professor, Jack Manahan, who enjoyed calling himself son-in-law to the Tsar. Anna died in 1984, age 87. Eugenia Smith was living in Chicago in 1963 when she published a book, Autobiography of H.I.H. Anastasia Nikolaevna of Russia. She claimed she regained consciousness in the cellar after the execution and escaped Russia on foot. She gained a small band of followers. Michael Goleniewski was a Polish immigrant who became a United States CIA agent. He claimed to be Tsarevich Alexei and to have secret knowledge of the Tsar's fortune. He was about 20 years younger than the Tsarevich would have been, and claimed that his hemophilia, of which he had no other symptoms, made him appear younger. He met Eugenia Smith, and the pair corroborated each other's claims in Life magazine. Alexis Bremeyer was a serial royal pretender who claimed to be the grandson of Maria and thus the rightful heir to the Russian throne. He also claimed to be His Serene Highness Prince Kieganhuller Obensberg until the real prince sued him, and that he was the son of Prince Nikolai Dolgorukiy of Russia until Nikolai's real descendants sued him. He also alleged that he was the descendant of a member of the French royal family who had escaped execution during the revolution, and that he was thus entitled to the throne of Naples. He wrote letters to various real royals demanding to be recognized, and he nearly convinced royalists in Serbia to make him king. He died in 1995 without a throne. In 1979, the Romanovs' gravesite was discovered by amateur investigators. They kept the location a secret until the fall of communism. In 1991, they went public and the site was excavated. The remains of Nikolai, Alexandra, and three of the daughters were identified. Prince Philip, the husband of Queen Elizabeth II, one of the closest living relatives to the Romanovs, provided the crucial DNA sample, which confirmed their identities. But the remains of Alexei and one of the younger daughters were unaccounted for, fueling rumors of an escape. Anna Anderson had died a decade earlier, but her DNA was compared and was found not to be a match to the Romanovs. Her DNA did match Franziska's brother, who later confessed that he had recognized his sister, but decided to leave her to her comfortable life, deceiving nobility. In 2007, two more bodies were found in a separate burial site and were confirmed to be those of Alexei and Maria Romanov. The Russian Orthodox Church canonized the entire family as saints in 2000. Their bodies have been laid to rest in Peter and Paul Cathedral. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe. I'll be putting out new episodes every Tuesday, revisiting and revamping my most popular YouTube videos, unburying some of my favorite hidden gems, and adding even more fascinating information for your listening pleasure. Want some visuals with your history? Then check out my YouTube channel, History Tea Time with Lindsay Holiday, where you can find hundreds of videos about queens of the world, royal history, women's history, and more. You can also follow History Tea Time on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok. This podcast is part of the Airwave Media Podcast Network. Visit airwavemedia.com to listen and subscribe to other great shows like Queen's Podcast, Ancient History Fangirl, Redacted History, and more.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.